From the response to COVID-19 in tribal communities to the appointment of an Indigenous woman to a presidential cabinet position. We continue now with In the Moment. Coming up this hour, SDPB's Richard Tubles joins us for a recap of a national address that explores the state of Indian nations and how respect for sovereignty and treaty agreements matters in the United States. President Joe Biden signs new legislation that could impact your health insurance premiums. Deb Muller from Avera Health Plan joins us to help you understand the opportunities ahead. Plus, we travel to Wind Cave National Park for a conversation with the superintendent about visitation, ecology, and interpretation. That's coming up later in the hour. News is next. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment.
I'm John Wynn with SDPB News. The federal government has extended the deadline to enroll in the health insurance marketplace. President Joe Biden extended enrollment to May 15th, partly because of hardships caused by COVID-19. Courtney Meyer is the director of product development at Sanford Health Plans. She says the extension should help remove any obstacles to getting health care.
For this time of year, you would have to have what's called a special enrollment period. Basically, it's something as a result of a life event. You lost your job, you got married, you had a baby. Those types of events would be required to come on during this time of year and get health insurance.
Meyer says roughly 10% of people in a four-state region, including North and South Dakota, Minnesota, and Iowa, are not insured. She says health insurance is now more affordable because of the online marketplace and new federal subsidies. The state of South Dakota expects to receive about $1.37 billion in new federal coronavirus relief money. That's about $100 million more than the state received last year. Governor Kristi Noem and the state legislature passed appropriations bills for state spending without considering that money. Noem says it's not clear how the money will affect state planning.
And we've asked the legislature to wait on making any decisions on what they think that could be utilized for. That bill is pretty broad and pretty complicated, and the impact on our state could be different based on whatever guidance Treasury does give us.
The state still has approximately $166 million left from the first round of federal relief money. Spending plans are in place for all but $8 million of it. South Dakota students report fewer COVID-19 cases over the past week. K-12 schools report 211 students and staff tested positive for the coronavirus since last Sunday. That's down 86 cases from the last report. 188 schools report at least one current infection. Schools have recorded more than 13,000 total cases since last fall. Students make up roughly 73% of those infections. Colleges and universities report 33 cases last week. Students and staff have recorded more than 500 cases since January. Today's weather, mostly cloudy skies with highs in the lower 30s to the lower 40s. Later this afternoon, expect a slight chance of drizzle, snow, and freezing drizzle in the west, then reducing to a slight chance of snow. In the northeast, patchy drizzle. Later this evening, mostly cloudy skies statewide with a chance of snow in the west closer to midnight. In the southeast, snow is likely, which could mix with rain. A slight chance of snow in the northeast over the night with some patchy fog beginning this evening. Evening lows are in the upper teens to the lower 30s. On Wednesday, mostly cloudy across the state with a chance of snow in the west just before noon. Patchy fog in the northeast. Tomorrow's highs are in the upper 30s to the mid-40s. Coming up next, it's In the Moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
What do you do with the pieces of a broken heart?
We ask the big questions, and sometimes we even answer them. I'm Larry Gross. Join us each week for Mountain Stage, live performance radio from NPR.
Listen Saturday evening at 6, 5 Mountain, and Sundays at noon, 11 Mountain on SDPB.
State House coverage provided by Boyce Law Firm, building lasting relationships that transcend generations, representing a variety of industries and employment matters, including defense of workers' comp claims. Experience, integrity, community. BoyceLaw.com.
As we celebrate 1,000 shows on SDPB, In the Moment evolves to meet your needs. Beginning Monday, March 29th, the In the Moment team unwraps an updated version of the program. We'll hear from a wider range of people, focus on topics you've told us you appreciate, and shine a light on the place we call home. Listen to In the Moment with Lori Walsh, middays and evenings, beginning March 29th on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by SDN Communications. Even the wireless revolution needs a lifeline, and SDN is happy to provide 50,000 miles of broadband fiber support. More at SDNCommunications.com.
You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. The National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp recently delivered the annual State of the Indian Nations Address. The NCAI includes the nation's 574 federally recognized tribes, as well as state-recognized tribes and other indigenous peoples. SDPB's Richard Tubles joins us now with more on the address. Welcome, Richard. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, no worries, Lori. Thank you for having me. It's kind of one of those things where I'm really excited to be here today because it's the first time I've been able to come live on your show. So thank you for having me.
Yes, we're looking forward to it, and listeners get to know you a little bit better today as well. But first, just tell me a little bit more about the address.
Well, President Fawn Sharp covered the importance of the National Congress of American Indians and, you know, the unity that it represents, specifically the resolve of the tribes while they navigate through, you know, what's happening with the current COVID-19 pandemic.
I stand before you to proclaim the state of Indian nations is standing strong. Our resolve is being tested by dire crises across multiple fronts. But we are rising to the occasion, undaunted, drawing on the strength, fortitude, wisdom, and lived experience of our ancestors, who overcame equally grave challenges in their time to prepare us to meet the challenges of our time.
You know, Lori, what's really interesting about this is that she's addressing the importance of government-to-government relations. And with the new administration, she's looking forward to working with President Biden, you know, and strengthening that relationship. And I think recently, you know, one of the biggest things that happened for Indian country is President Biden just did that $1.9 trillion stimulus package. And $26 billion of that is going directly to tribes to help combat the effects of COVID-19 on this already vulnerable population.
Yeah. So what kind of topics did President Sharp address specifically in regards to the pandemic and how it's impacted not only the nation, but First Peoples?
You know, I think here in South Dakota, there is a relationship that needs to be addressed when it comes to tribes and the state government. And one of the biggest lessons, I believe, is that we need to strengthen that. And we not only with, you know, tribes and the federal government, but we need to keep an avenue of dialogue open with our current state government administration.
The truth is, we have been here many times before, and we have always persevered. Exercising our inherent sovereign rights as governments, tribal nations are curtailing the spread and impacts of the virus, combating climate change, growing the movement for equity and justice, confronting continued threats to tribal jurisdiction and self-governance, and sparing no effort in holding the federal government accountable to its trust and treaty obligations to all of us. We have navigated through darkness and turmoil, helping not only Indian country, but the entire nation reach a new dawn. In the recent elections, a record number of Americans chose a new direction, one which champions equity, diversity, and inclusion, and which seeks to honor the unique political status of tribal nations, tribal citizens, and the extraordinary contributions we make to this country.
You know, Lori, here in South Dakota, there hasn't really been much of a dialogue in regards to, you know, the state talking with tribal leadership. But COVID-19 has put us in a situation that should bring solidarity in regards to how we're handling this pandemic. But mm-hmm. what really happened was there was this dialogue that broke down when the Ogallala Sioux Tribe and the Cheyenne River Sioux Tribe decided to initiate checkpoints to not only deter like the spread of the virus, but to track it if there was an outbreak.
Yeah, and to your point, those checkpoints were challenged aggressively by Governor Kristi Noem, and it made nationwide news as people tried to figure out how that would actually unfold. So I want to ask you, Richard, you know, the vaccination process is rolling out across the state. You know, every tribe that shares geography with the state of South Dakota opted to use the federal vaccination plan and through IHS, and that vaccination is going exceedingly well. So now that there are vaccinations in place, what are some of the other issues or situations that Native America is facing or focusing on at this point? We're not out of the woods yet, but clearly there's, you know, more than one topic today, too.
Yeah, I believe that we really have a footing on what's happening. You know, being vulnerable population, I feel like the rollout with the vaccinations is like going really well. But not only that, mm-hmm. though, but we're seeing something historic on a national level. You have Native American New Mexico Representative Deb Holland, who is going to be running the Department of Interior, which is specifically, you know, it handles all things Native American in regards to their affairs. And not only is it historic, Lori, but I think she understands that at her core, you know, the importance of tribal sovereignty in transforming the Department of Interior to not only defer, but dictate to tribal nations.
She understands us in our needs because she is one of us. She understands our shared Native truth because she has lived it. Also encouraging is the president's recent memorandum on tribal consultation, which reaffirms the federal government's trust and treaty obligations to tribal nations and mandates that federal agencies work with us to develop and implement tribal consultation action plans that fulfill those obligations.
And one of the main interesting points about that, Lori, is that Native Americans have always been stewards of, you know, this land, you know, being the first peoples. Mm-hmm. You know, in Lakota culture, we call Mother Earth Unchi Maka. That's what Mother Earth means. And I believe we have a real honest and traditional and historic connection to this land. And our philosophy is making sure that, you know, through our respect for this land, we leave it so that our future, you know, like our generations can find that spiritual and human connection as well, the way that our ancestors did. And, you know, with the Biden administration, it's really taking those steps to honor that sort of philosophy. And it's another step in building that government-to-government relation and also maintain those treaty obligations.
And that reminds me, Richard, of what President Sharp said earlier in this address, which is these are the leaders of when you talk about that tradition of being stewards of the land, the rest of the nation mm-hmm. can really look to those cultures and say, how is this fundamental to how you live and how do mm-hmm. you address it? And there's a lot to be learned there. Would you agree with that? Am I missing anything there?
No, definitely. You know, there's a lot of strong opinions in regards to this. You know, there was recently a bill that was supposed to create a Native American-based curriculum school system, you know, and I think that didn't work out in the legislature this session recently, but I feel really strongly about it. You know, like my grandfather, I grew up with hearing stories of him talk about, you know, how he visited Rapid City from Pine Ridge. And he remembers seeing signs in businesses that said no Indians allowed, you know. And if you look at that history, you know, there's a lot of situations mm-hmm. that have been mishandled by the government. But when you look at the Wounded Knee legislation that passed recently, the resolution to support the revoking of the Medal of Honors, you know, those are just kind of some of the things that Native Americans have been dealing with, you know. And not only that, though, but like it's still fresh in our minds, the boarding schools that a lot of our elders had to go through to, you know, they were removed from their homes, they were forced to go to these schools. Some of the young men were, they had to get their hair cut to be what Western civilization wanted them to be. And, you know, I'm a father of two children right now, and I'm trying to get my son to understand that his long hair is a part of his identity and it's a part of his culture. So I believe that it's humbly fitting, you know, that there should be a Lakota-based school that teaches, you know, these younger generations to come back to be a part of this conversation of what they were as far as being first people, so that they can carry on the ancestral knowledge of their ancestors.
That must be something to be the grandson of somebody and then the father of somebody. There's an incredible connection. Your grandfather told you stories about boarding schools and about being forced to go there. Do you remember those stories growing up? Like, how small were you when you first started hearing those stories and really trying to process them alongside your own education?
Well, you know, it's interesting because where you grew up at was Red Shirt Table, which is the southwestern part of the Badlands unit on Pine Ridge Indian Reservation. And the nearest school he went to was, you know, probably hundreds of miles away. And I just remember not only was it just the boarding schools, but it was the faith-based educational systems that were in the community that, when it comes to my perspective, I don't know anything else, you know, but when it comes to my grandfather's perspective, you know, he grew up, he knew the way of that life that I didn't get to experience. So a lot of that is lost on me per se, but it's also something that I feel like we should be able to bring back when it comes to something like a Lakota-based school teaching that curriculum.
Right. And it makes me think, too, of the challenges of COVID-19 in tribal communities because of the risk to elders. And many of those elders are the people or were the people who held so much of that knowledge. Now, tribal communities prioritized vaccinations for elders in that way. Did they not? Do I understand that correctly?
I believe that most tribes across the nation are doing that, which is fitting, you know. One of the biggest things that happened at these boarding schools is that they didn't let the children that were there speak their native tongue. And, you know, historically in our state, within these tribes here, our language is dying out. And that's just another reason why we need something in regards to a Lakota-based curriculum, because when my father's parents moved to Rapid City to do what they do in regards to their life, they didn't teach my father and his siblings Lakota because they knew that in order for them to succeed, they needed to learn English. And that could have been very well something that they learned from being in those boarding schools. So therefore, my generation is not knowing how to speak fluent Lakota.
Richard Tuples, thank you so much for being here with us today. We really appreciate getting to know you a little better and bringing excerpts from this national address, which we look forward to every year. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much, Lori, for having me.
It's SDPB's Richard Tuples. We'll take a break later in the hour. We're going to talk about President Biden's attempt to add tax credits for health premiums and how it might help you have a little bit less toward those premiums in the days ahead. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, how the growing use of automation is eliminating jobs and sophisticated algorithms based on artificial intelligence are affecting our lives in unseen ways. We talk with New York Times tech columnist Kevin Roos. His new book is Future Proof, 9 Rules for Humans in the Age of Automation. Join us.
Tonight at 7 Central, 6 Mountain,
on SDPB Radio.
Program funding provided by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting Voting Why It Matters, featuring virtual events with authors, activists, and scholars, including Gloria Steinem, Louise Erdrich, and Thomas E. Patterson. More at sdhumanities.org.
Pianist Chick Corea, who died last month, won 2 Grammy Awards on Sunday. The other big jazz winner was composer Maria Schneider, who also took home a pair of trophies. I'm Carl Gerke, and this evening on Jazz Nightly, we'll hear Corea and Schneider's Grammy-winning music, along with other recipients of Jazz Grammy Gold, vocalist Kurt Elling, bandleader-composer Arturo O'Farrell, and pianist-arranger John Beasley. You can join me at 8 Central, 7 Mountain, here on SDPB Radio.
Quality news reporting is more important than ever. Your financial support is more important to us than ever. Support radio that's important to you. Become a member of SDPB today. SDPB.org/donate.
You know, there's nothing better than sitting down with a friend to share the music you discovered with each other. And that friend is right here for you on public radio. It's me. Hi, I'm Raina Duras. I host The World Cafe, and I promise I'll never cancel on you because I need to stay home and wash my hair, or I want to go see the 400th Batman movie to come out this year. I'll be here every show with music you love and brand new stuff I think you're going to love on World Cafe.
Weeknights at 11, 10 Mountain. Health reporting on SDPB is supported by Monument Health.
You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. President Joe Biden has authorized the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021. What does that plan mean for your health insurance needs? What do we know about potential tax credits or the potential expansion of Medicaid for states who have yet to do so? Deb Muller is the CEO of Avera Health Plans, and she's joining us now with insight. Welcome back to the program, Deb. Thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Lori. It's nice to be back.
So the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, I feel like first we should all take a break and say, wow, this stuff changes quickly. I imagine you've been trying to get your arms around a whole new policy for some time now.
Yes. Just when you think you've got it figured out, things change and you're going, okay, well, we'll figure this one out too. And we just keep figuring things out as they go forward with healthcare.
Yeah. All right, so everybody take a deep breath because it's about to change again.
April 1st.
We shouldn't be surprised. Yeah, we shouldn't be surprised. Because the Democrats for some time have been, and Joe Biden said in his campaign that he wanted, you know, it's Biden Care, the American, ACA, the Affordable Care Act would look different. So signed in March, taking effect April 1st, what are some of the highlights? Let's start with these people who are meeting their insurance needs through the marketplace.
Yes, we have, this is primary. Let's talk, if I could start by saying who this doesn't affect. If you've got insurance through a government program like Medicare, Medicaid, or you've got insurance through your employer, those two groups are not affected at all by this. However, if you're getting individual policies through healthcare.gov, or if you're buying individual policies direct from an insurance carrier like Avera Health Plans, this particular change that's coming about on April 1st is something that you should seriously take a look at, because there is financial benefits more than likely to you to take a look at the difference now in advanced premium tax credits under the American Rescue Act versus before. Most of the impact is going to be for folks who are current enrollees underneath healthcare.gov, because there is an improvement in their subsidies. If you're already on healthcare.gov, you've selected a plan on healthcare.gov, you will receive additional tax credits for a period of 2 years. Now, you've got a choice there. If you want to go out and actually get your tax credit immediately, beginning in May, to reduce the cost of your monthly premium, you can do that, or if you're already enrolled, or if you want to, you can wait until you file your taxes for 2021 if your budgets are already set for this year and you plan for the expenses that you have already in place. you can wait until you file your taxes for 2021 and then get the tax credit, but you'll still be given your tax credit as a refund on your taxes when you file them for 2021. So the question for current enrollees is it going to be of benefit for me to do this right away, or shall I just wait and take the benefit on the tax return when I file it for 2021? That's current enrollees that are in healthcare.gov getting subsidies right now or getting tax credits right now for their health insurance. The other group of people that are going to be significant.
I'm going to jump in and ask a couple questions before we move on. But if I'm a current enrollee and I've set my budget, do I need to do nothing then? Or do I still need to do something to indicate that I'm making a change? Or do I just wait until next tax season and then talk to my tax preparer about it?
Yep. And actually, that'll all be handled behind the scenes at that point in time. But if you are an existing enrollee, and you want to get your increased tax credits right away, you do have to go out to the website, healthcare.gov. You have to update your eligibility application. You have to reselect your current plan for the tax credits, for the new tax credits to take effect. If you do not go to healthcare.gov, you aren't going to see the changes to your monthly advanced premium tax credit right away, but you will receive that additional tax credit when you file and reconcile your 2021 taxes in April of next year.
So explain to us how this works if you're a current enrollee and you have Avera Health Plans. Do you go to healthcare.gov or are you going somewhere else? How is that different?
Yeah, we took a pretty deep dive on this internally to say what's going to be the easiest way for people to work through this. Our recommendation is for people to reach back out to us directly or reach out to an agent, because this is not a typical open enrollment type of exercise for the folks that have been in the marketplace for since 2014, the last 6 years. So we recommend getting professional help in terms of working through, making sure that you've selected again correctly, that you've updated your information correctly, and that everything goes through seamlessly with healthcare.gov, because I would presume that we're going to have some access issues with healthcare.gov once between April 1st and May 15th, which is the time period that people have to make a selection and get their improved tax credits. So you're better off if you're working with a professional on this one. So we recommend you go to AveraHealthPlans.com. You can call us directly. You can call other carriers that are in the exchange directly, or you can find a local agent. And those are available through AveraHealthPlans.com as well. But definitely this time around, usually I'm a big supporter of saying you can just do it yourself on healthcare.gov. There's a lot to this one, and they're doing it in very short order that I would recommend talking to somebody about the enrollment activities, or for those that are current enrollees, updating your information and making sure that everything sticks.
Yeah, and we all remember when the healthcare.gov was first launched, the difficulties people had of accessing the system was just overwhelmed. Not saying that they can't do better than that now, but we have precedent and memory from not too long ago of the challenges, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I was hoping that the administration would have a auto correction, if you would, to people's eligibility and subsidy selection without forcing people to go back to the website and do the whole plan selection and eligibility application. They just didn't have enough time to get it done. So the only way that you can immediately get the impact of the subsidies is if you go out to healthcare.gov and doing all of those steps again. And that's why working with an agent or working with a carrier directly makes a lot of sense for folks this time around.
Yeah. Tell me about the window of the open enrollment, or the window of this. One more time, you mentioned it, but say it again, please.
Yeah, it goes. Right now we're in an open enrollment period because of the pandemic. Biden administration opened that up right away for February the 15th through May the 15th, 90 days. Okay. These new subsidies and the new subsidy methodology take place April 1st. So the websites are not going to be updated until April 1st. If you go in before April 1st, it will not hold your eligibility updates or your plan reselection. So we're just recommending folks go out after April 1st, but you need to get it done before May 15th. And that's true for new enrollees. as well. The new enrollees have a tremendous opportunity here. I'm just amazed at the benefit it will bring to a lot of South Dakotans that were just over the 400% of the federal poverty level in terms of capping what they're going to be paying for health insurance for the next 2 years.
All right, let's go there next. New enrollees. So you don't have health insurance at all through your employer. You don't have it through healthcare.gov. Frankly, that terrifies me because health insurance is very important to me personally. But I know many people who are in that position. What do they need to know about this?
They need to know that with the American Rescue Act, what changes is the subsidy cliff. Used to, in the current ACA, at 400% of the federal poverty level, you are done with getting any tax credits. What they've done now with it, with this particular act, is they've said if you make over 400% of the federal poverty level, we will give you a tax credit for anything that would be paid over and above 8.5% of your household income. Before, you didn't get anything. So let me put that into real person terms for you.
Yeah, right.
Let's take a household income of $75,000. Two people in the household, both of them 60 years of age. Let's say they took early retirement and maybe a part-time job in between. So that household income is $75,000 for those two people. They would have they wouldn't get a tax credit under the current ACA. In fact, they would be paying over $24,000 a year for health insurance.
Wow.
$24,000 a year for a silver plan. It's just amazing to say that out loud.
Right.
Because of this two-year extension of tax credits that will cap their exposure at 8.5% of their income, they will instead pay only $6,375 a year. So they've cut their premiums to a third of what they were.
Wow. So a lot of people who have, a lot of people have just been priced out of this before really need to perk up their ears and listen. In your experience, you know, one of the things we found was just how many farmers this impacted, how many people in rural mm-hmm. South Dakota this has impacted. Is this a huge opportunity for those people?
Yeah. In fact, the most phone calls that we received at this point in time were with folks calling who have gotten private insurance, but it's a bare bones policy, or they've gone without insurance and they're calling and saying, okay, and they're self-insuring. What does this mean for me in terms of these tax credits? Are they going to be available to us now? And it's like, yes, they are. In fact, with South Dakota, according to a study that was released a couple of months ago, we will see the most significant impact of these tax credits. I think we're like the third highest state in terms of impact of the tax credit. And the tax credit will affect rural and those that are a little more senior in age. You know, those are in the 50 to 65 club.
Any idea how many people?
Right now, they're telling us it's about 10,000 to 12,000 people potentially that are going to be able to get tax credits that fell off the cliff previously.
Yeah.
That's a lot for our size of a state.
Right. So I want to ask you about a couple other things that are in this legislation and if you can provide any insight into them. And one of them is just how COVID, COVID treatment is paid for. Is that something that has to be covered by insurance plans? What does that change at all?
No, it doesn't change at all. As long as the public health emergency is in place, health insurance companies, licensed health insurance companies, there are other types mm-hmm. of health plans that are out there that aren't insurance companies, but licensed health plans have to cover COVID treatment, COVID testing. And for the most part, you follow your normal deductible coinsurance, co-pays, et cetera, for that coverage, except for testing. Testing is covered still at 100%.
Okay. And then I wanted to ask about Medicaid expansion, because there are incentives for states who have not expanded Medicaid. Did I hear you sigh? Tell me, can you help us understand that better?
Yeah. Well, maybe. Yeah. The American Rescue Act itself and these individual policyholders that are out there that we were just talking about, if you make 100% of the federal poverty level or below, you do not get access to tax credits at all. The intention of the ACA was to go from 0 to 100% of the federal poverty level, so we're talking the poorest of the poor, were to go to state Medicaid programs under the expansion dollars that were part of the ACA. There are approximately 12 states in the United States, I believe it is, that did not expand Medicaid. South Dakota is one of those states. The federal government, in order to encourage, entice, depends upon what kind of word you'd like to use there, states to expand the Medicaid program, provided matching funds for the state, and the match was significant. Prior to the American Rescue Act, it was 90% that were going to be federal dollars with 10% state. In this particular act, they moved that 90% match up to 95% for the state. So the state would only have to come up with 5%. There is a capstone to that, though. It doesn't always stay at 95%. But, you know, the theory is that you can get people engaged in health care, get them healthier, and then eventually you don't need as much money to take care of them because they're going to be in a better health status position. You know, right now, I know that the state has no interest in expanding Medicaid at this point in time. I don't think anything has changed in the last several weeks. You know, we'll continue to keep watch on it, but there really isn't a good solution for those that are 100% of the federal poverty level or less, except the route of expanded Medicaid, which does not look like it's going to be on the time horizon here in South Dakota.
How long was that cap for, that 95%? It would last for how many?
I don't recall, and that's one that I would want to make sure that I spoke correctly on.
Right,
But it does have an expiration date on it.
Because that brings me back to the back to healthcare.gov and AveraHealthPlans.com and other individual, you know, providers, those current enrollees. This is temporary. It's 2 years. So for people who come to you and say, you know, I just have whiplash from this, is it worth my time to go in and make adjustments if it's going to be 2 years? Is the idea that once we get past that 2 years, it'll get extended? Advice on that?
I've thought a lot about that myself, as to whether or not it's worth your time and attention. And then I take a look at what kind of impact this is bringing immediately to folks. So those people that were over 400% of the federal poverty level and paying $24,000 a year, and now they can pay $6,000 a year, go for the tax credit. Just do it. It's very important to have health insurance, especially as you get older. Just do it. For those that are in the changes to the subsidies for the next 2 years, and they've already got a plan, they're already getting a subsidy, if they've already budgeted, I would maybe go out to the Kaiser Family Foundation and just put my numbers in and see how much, you know, I'm going to get for benefit, you know, as an estimate, and say, is it really worth my time to do this, or can I wait until I file my taxes in 2021? That would be how I'd make that judgment call. Now, your longer term question here is, what's going to be the play out? Are we going to see before the midterm elections in 2022 more action that would do an extension or would make it permanent? I think that's probably on the board right now for at least one of the parties, is to take a look at how you can extend this on into the future. No guarantees. So you have to do what's in your best interest for right now and take it. If you were older, I would definitely do it and then just allow the rest of it to fall into place when I do my taxes. if I was younger than that, that's how I would look at it. And I'd say 2 years is a long time in healthcare policy these days.
It's definitely in flux often. So from a policy standpoint and a bottom line standpoint for a plan like Avera Health Plans, is this a positive move for your organization? Is it just more change? How would you characterize it?
I would characterize it as it is always a good thing to get more people covered because the risk pool expands. It brings down eventually insurance premiums for everyone. That's a good thing. And we're taking care of people, keeping them healthier, getting them in for their routine doctor appointments. We recognize that pandemics haven't gotten people in for their preventive screenings like they should be doing. All of this is a good thing. So from a company perspective, we say, this is great. We need to participate in this. We need to be vocal about encouraging people to do what's in their best interest going forward here when it comes to the tax credits. I'll admit, as a business enterprise, 45 days, April 1st to May 15th, is a really short runway to get all of this done. There are 31,000 members currently in South Dakota on the exchange between the carriers that are on the exchange. If all of them decide to change to go online, reselect their plans to get their eligibility adjustments made, that's a lot of bandwidth required. Plus, you want to service all the rest of these 10 to 12,000 people that have never had the ability to be able to get tax credits before. There's a lot to get done in 45 days. And I'm wondering how we're going to get this all done. Probably the Biden administration will say we'll extend it another 30 days, but I wouldn't bank on it.
Right. All right. Go to healthcare.gov, AveraHealthPlans.com, the other carriers on the marketplace as well. Deb Muller is CEO of Avera Health Plans. Thank you so much for helping us sort through this. We really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Lori. Thank you.
Up next, we go to Wind Cave National Park and meet the new superintendent there. We'll talk about how things have been during the pandemic and what it looks like as we ease back into normal. You're on listener-supported SDPB Radio.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Mexico is on the verge of legalizing marijuana. It will become the world's largest market for legal pot. So how will that affect the drug cartels that operate inside the country? Also, more journalists are dying on the job around the world. We'll ask why next time on Here and Now.
This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, noon Mountain on SDPB Radio.
Program funding is provided by Denny Menholt Auto Group, Rapid City. During this time, we are here and ready to serve you, still providing the same quality service you've come to expect. Doing our part to keep you safe at Denny Menholt Auto Group, Rapid City.
All across the internet, a game of whack-a-mole is being played. Far-right extremists are moving quickly from one platform to the next as big tech removes their right to post content.
We're hanging on for dear life. And we're going to survive off the platforms. We're entering a totally new chapter in the movement and on the internet as a whole.
Extremism in the virtual space. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain on SDPB. Take In the Moment with you wherever you go with the In the Moment podcast. New episodes drop every Friday and feature the best of the week from news and the arts. Download and subscribe to In the Moment wherever you get your podcasts. Sports and recreation reporting is supported by Horton Incorporated of Britton, South Dakota.
You're listening to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Lee Welling has been at the helm as superintendent of Wind Cave National Park since early November. Her background is in geology and personal history. She began her career with the National Park Service in 2002. During that career, she has served as a regional scientist and a national lead on climate change. She's also worked to increase diversity and inclusion in earth sciences curricula, and she joins us now on the phone. Superintendent Welling, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for inviting me.
Let's spend a little time getting to know you because you have memories of Wind Cave from childhood. Tell us a little bit about your background and what some of those early memories are.
Well, I was born about 50 miles to the south in Crawford, Nebraska. So I grew up as the youngest daughter in a ranching family, and my father was also from there, from Crawford. But we would go back and forth. He had property in eastern Montana near a town called Ekalaka. So we would travel back and forth, and the Black Hills is on that route. And I remember driving through many times. And, you know, Wind Cave is an easy place to get to. We didn't always go into the cave itself, but I do remember a lot of times driving through and seeing the buffalo and the prairie dogs. But my brother also worked in the park, my older brother, and I spent some summers up here and had with him and his girlfriend that worked here giving tours. And so I do also have memories of being in the cave at a young age and actually being able to go off tour at one point. So those kind of memories stick with you.
What made you want to go into science?
You know, I've just always had an interest in how the world works. My mother said that if she would go somewhere to visit family, she always knew what to bring back to me was some kind of a rock. So I don't know why, I can't really explain it, but I've always had that interest and always had kind of a collection, you know, of rocks and fossils and things like that. So I just always had an interest in I sort of look at it these days as Earth systems, because I've also studied oceanography and that led to the work on climate change. And I really am interested in how things interact, you know, and also how people interact with the environment. So
one of my best friends is a geologist, and going places with her, you always, if you're smart, you stop and ask her what she's looking at, because she sees the world totally different from how I see the world. And it's fascinating to slow down and say, what's this, a bunch of times with the geologist by your side.
You frame it in a way that a lot of people don't. It is a different perspective. And, you know, there are multiple perspectives and lenses that people see the world through. And you're exactly right, that sort of geology, you know, or ecology lens is a particular one. I had that experience back one time coming back into Nebraska, because I hadn't been there for a long time. And I actually was coming back, unfortunately, for my aunt's funeral in Whitney, but I was sort of just driving along and not thinking about too much, and started interpreting the landscape, like, you know, and all of a sudden it just hit me that it was like around Scott's Bluff, I think, and I thought, oh wow, I actually know this place in a different way. So these two perspectives kind of collided in a weird way. That was the first time I really became aware of how my perceptions had changed with my education, actually.
You mentioned driving through, and I've, of course, driven through Wind Cave National Park multiple times, and, you know, the wildlife I've noticed. What are some of the things, just tell me one or two things, because I'm sure there's 100 answers or a million answers to this question. What am I not seeing? I drive through, I see buffalo. I drive through, I see prairie dogs. When I'm driving through, what are just a few of the things that I don't see unless I get out of my car and I know what I'm looking for?
Well, certainly on the, you know, micro scale, or looking at vegetative changes, you wouldn't necessarily observe that unless you had an eye for it. And I'm actually not, I'm not able to identify a lot of different kinds of plant species myself. But I think that's something that people, you know, kind of, they see the animals and they see the things that are obvious, and they don't always see the background and the background changes. But the other piece that to me is fascinating at Wind Cave is the below ground, and to just think about, as you're driving on the surface, what's actually below the ground. And we have a fair amount of knowledge about that now. And we talk about that being maybe two different parks, but really, really it's a living system that breathes, you know, the cave actually breathes, and you know, it has a strong spirit here. So I think, you know, you can drive and you can say, what's the natural environment and what am I seeing? But the pace here is a little bit slower. And so just getting out and letting, you know, letting the environment kind of seep into you, I think, in a way. It's very peaceful. And for me, it always, and maybe that's from the childhood memories or whatever, but it's always had a really strong presence. And I, you know, the Lakota people have emerged from the cave. So their origin story is at Wind Cave. And I think by that very story, you can understand how the cave and the surface are connected through the human spirit. Mm. So to me, it's a very integrated view. And I think if you just spend time walking around and let it seep in, and maybe not think about it that much.
Mm. Good advice for me. Tell me a little bit about, you know, visitation and interpretation when you tell the story of this is an indigenous place, a sacred place. This is a place where, you know, this happened, this story is told. Is that part of the interpretation of the national park for visitors? How do you increase that awareness and that respect for all of that in someone who might be coming, you know, and have absolutely no concept of any of this history? Tell me about that.
Well, our interpreters know that that's a part of the story that they tell. So that is something that they learn when they come and do their training for the summer. Most of our interpreters are summer seasonals. So that that emergent story with a little bit more detail than what I shared is a part mm-hmm. of what they share when they give tours and when they interact with people. And we've been told those stories. It's not something that we tell ourselves. We work to tell it in the voice of the people whose ancestors actually lived here. We have new exhibits that are coming within the next few years that the park staff have been working on for a really long time, and I've had a look at those plans recently, and that Native American perspective is something that is integrated throughout all of the exhibits, and in fact even in the orientation of the exhibits with awareness of the different directions and what they mean. And so I think that's something that people are going to be really pleased to see when we're finally able to get those in place. So
yeah.
We also have a former interpreter who on video that tells that emergent story. She was a Lakota woman, and she still works within the National Park Service as well. She's not here, but so we have pieces, and there's more that we can do for sure.
Yeah. As you served as lead for national lead on climate change, what can you tell us about some of the National Park Service efforts in that direction and how they might impact a park like Wind Cave National Park?
Well, we have a national program that is housed in our Fort Collins office in Colorado, and they work, and that's the program that I formerly led, and they work to through different regions in the Park Service and sort of help parks that are in different challenges. I just recently was up in Alaska, where the challenges of climate change are pretty dramatic and pretty apparent. In a place like Wind Cave, it might be a little bit harder to see it firsthand, but there isn't a park and there isn't a place, you know, in the U.S. or globally for that matter, that hasn't been touched by the changes that are occurring. And, you know, they're oftentimes challenging to see when you're just in the moment. You kind of have to that's where science comes in. You have to have data and information to look back and some tools to look forward. Here, probably one of the biggest ways that we're seeing the effects of climate change is with fire and the extension of the fire season, both coming on earlier and lasting longer, and then the drought and the dryness. So we see these. Mm. I mean, we had a small fire about a month ago that we were able to put out very quickly. But I mean, there was snow on the ground, and it's just surprising to people that how easy it is for fires to start these days. The ignitions occur more easily than what we're used to. So that's one of the big ways here, for sure.
What can people who live here in South Dakota do to support the park, to support efforts, you know, of the national parks nationwide? Are there things that you'd like the public to know and be engaged in?
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, we're a conservation organization, you know, and I think that fits well within the way people, the worldviews that you have here in the not only the native communities that I've mentioned, but the ranching communities that, you know, of people that live around here. We want to see the specialness of areas that are, you have to be special in order to be designated as a national park, and we want to see those last, you know, for our kids and our grandkids. That's in our enabling legislation. So I think visiting, having that experience, sharing that with your kids, making it a family affair, and, you know, becoming stewards of for conservation is our goal. And in terms of interacting with the public, we have a lot of support from the public. We're a well-loved organization, and I would just say, come out and visit, and you know, experience the national parks. That's why we're here.
Yeah, more than 100 years now. Do you have a vision for Wind Cave in the future? What are some of the things that you, and just our remaining 30 seconds or so, new interpretation on the way, a long time coming, anything else that you're really sort of looking forward to?
We're really looking forward to getting open.
Yeah.
Elevators that are required to give tours have been under repair. And then COVID-19 hit, the pandemic, and we were really, really hoping to get open soon. People are very excited about it. And I know that's short term, but this has been it's been a longer process than anybody anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
So... for me, that's
any idea of when that
right
might
now.
Be? When do we know when?
Well, we're waiting. You know, we're waiting on approval to open and have to meet certain requirements to be able to protect our staff and the public, right? So it's the masking and social distancing. I would, you know, in terms of the public, I would really appreciate people to understand that those requirements that we're implementing are what is allowing us to open. So I hope they will be patient and be willing to participate in that in order to be able to get themselves and their families on tours in the cave. And so our goal is to protect people and to be able to provide access, and we wouldn't be able to do it otherwise.
Lee Welling is superintendent of Wind Cave National Park. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you.